Monterey Bay. If we could please stand and join Director Porter in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can I please have a roll call?
Roll call to take it. Let the record show all members are present.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. Now is the time for public comments. Do we have any public?
There are no hands raised.
Okay. We'll give it a second. This would be the time where you would have 3 minutes to talk about anything that is not on the agenda. Okay. We will close public comment and move to the consent calendar.
I make a motion to approve consent calendar.
Second.
Can I please get a roll call vote?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gatto?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you so much. And now to presentations. That was blank discussion and possible action item.
Correct.
Thank you so much. It's all blurry, you know? Okay, we'll go to discussion and possible action E1. The action to approve fiscal year 2022-2023 audited financial statements.
We have Sanguinetti, Pauline Sanguinetti, representing Sanguinetti, Sanguinetti and Vanderveen, our auditors.
Great. Thank you. Welcome up.
I'm up first. I thought maybe there was somebody before me.
Nope, not today.
Good evening. Yes, I'm Pauline Sanguinetti with Procy Sanguinetti and Vanderveen. This is my business partner, folks, Johnny Hernandez. And he and I both came out this year to do field work, so... Oh, what's wrong?
I think it's off.
Oh, nobody can hear me.
We're recording.
It's for the live feed, yeah.
anyways, he and I both came out this year and did field work this year. So tonight I'm going to go ahead and go through the audit report for the June period of 2023 year. I'm not going to go through them every single page, so I'm not going to go through every all 50 pages or whatever we have here. But overall, so as you guys know, you've had some changes happening during this fiscal year under audit and then subsequent to that. So it was a little different this year for us just because Margaret is off-site. She works remote. And but we got through, you know, we needed to. We kind of adjusted a little bit, but it's just we've been through a lot of things, so it's just what you do, right? So, but we were able to get everything we needed, and Deegan was there, and the staff, and we were able to pull records and stuff like that. So, everything, you know, went fine. We have a few management comments, and I'll go through that after I get done. So I'm gonna go ahead and just kind of get into the audit report. And so on the first page, this is our auditor's opinion, our auditor's report. So this is where we issue our opinion. So we've issued an unmodified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance that we can give you as your auditors. That's a clean opinion. There are no material statements to the financial statements. This is a very standard report. This is what you've received historically. So there isn't anything out of the ordinary here. Again, it's a very vanilla, standard auditor's report. And then if you, the next section of the audit is the management's discussion and analysis. So in this section, this is where there's some narrative explanations regarding fluctuations from last year to this year. So this is the only place in your financial statements that you will see comparative data. The rest of the financial statements are just single year presentation. So if you do want to see comparisons, this is where you need to look. The first, on page 4, where it starts, it gives you a narrative of some of the financial highlights explaining the changes. I'm going to go ahead and just kind of, I'm going to skip to the tables because on pages 4 and 5, we also explain to you the two types of financial statements that you pretty much have inside of this one audit. One of them is what's called government-wide financial statements, and the other one is called fund financial statements. So just so you know the difference, government-wide is full accrual. Fund financial statements is modified accrual. So when you look at those statements, you're going to see that there are no long-term assets and there are no long-term liabilities. Those are all stripped out. So on these first few pages here, it kind of explains the difference between what we call government-wide and what we call fund. On to page 6, this is the first table you'll see, and your balance sheet, and you have your governmental activities, which are your lighting, landscaping, you know, zone 8 and 9, as well as your community center and general fund, and then your business type activities is your water and sewer. Then you have your total column. So here, this is where you can see comparisons from last year to this year. You can see your variances in dollar format. So as you can see, your total assets for the year did go down about 2.7 million. Your total liabilities went down about 2.1 million. So your total net position for the year was a decrease of 656,000. And then down below, there's a paragraph that kind of explains the net position, which is made up of your investment and capital assets, restricted and unrestricted. Yes.
What's the difference between them? Or what defines total capital assets and current and non-current and other assets? What are other assets?
So
I get
current,
what capital assets are. What are other assets?
Yeah, so the current and other assets, so if you went to page, if you went to page 13, so your current and other current assets is going to be your cash and investments, accounts receivable, prepaid expenses. Those are all cash and your current and other assets. So other assets is like prepaids, accounts receivable.
That's what I was hoping it was.
Yes, and then your capital.
So that's more of a liquid asset than what would capital event
correct
asset would be. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Current typically means within a 12-month time frame.
Gotcha.
Continuing on to page 7, this is a table that shows you the income and expenses. Again, broken out by governmental activities and business type activities. Your total revenues for the year for both funds was $13,400,000. Your total expenses were a little over $14 million. So again, there's your change in net position of that decline of $656,000. You will see there's a large change in your investment income. You guys did new funds, and so your money is now earning more as it is being held in the Five Star Bank. So that was a significant increase there. Down below is some narrative on the explanations of the fluctuations that are more significant. So the first down below is regarding the governmental activities. And then on the next page, you'll see there's a graph and there's also a pie chart. Just so you can see the percentage of what your revenue sources are for the governmental activities. Again, that's light and landscaping, 8 and 9, your community center, and your general fund. On to page 9, this is the explanations of the business type activities, like your water and sewer, as well as a graph and a pie chart for those as well. On page 10, there's just more financial analysis of district funds regarding governmental funds and proprietary funds on the fund basis. And then down below is your capital asset, basically explaining that you have an investment in capital assets of about $58 million. And then continuing on to page 11, this highlights some of the major asset additions during the year. As you can see, your largest asset addition is that wastewater denitrification project. You also have an Edgeview pipeline replacement project, the wastewater vacuum truck, you know, some of these larger ticket items that happened during the year that contribute to that increase in your capital assets. Down below is a table, so you can see in a table format, you know, what makes up your capital assets, broken out by land, building and improvements, treatment and collection, etc. So your total capital assets before depreciation is $91,560,000. Your accumulated depreciation is $32,800,000, and so your net capital assets is up $58,680,000. As you can see, the largest change was in construction in progress. And that's due to, you know, additional bond funding that you guys did and just that large project that you're doing. On page 12, at the top, the debt administration, this is just also, again, explaining that you have bonds that you've acquired in different various years. And then this year, you were issued $11,650,000 as a refunding bond for the 2012 revenue bonds. And then on, that kind of concludes the management's discussion and analysis section. And then now we go into your basic financial statements. So again, that's this information, the same information I just went over, but it's in, you know, just sending your presentation and in more detail. So you can see your total assets for the year were at $90,416,000. Again, this is government-wide, full accrual, it has everything. Then your liabilities, your total liabilities were the $39,017,000. That's made up of your bonds, accounts payable, interest payable, your unamortized bond premium. And then your net position, again, is broken out between net investment and capital assets, the restriction for capital projects, and then the unrestricted portion, which is basically for general operations of the district. So your total net position at the end of the year is the $51,373,000. Next is the statement of activities on the government-wide basis. Again, broken out by the different governmental activities and business-type activities. So this just gives you it broken out by fund. So again, your decrease in your net position was about $656,000 total. Your governmental activities, it was a decrease of $17,000, and your business type activities, it was a decrease of $639,000. Page 15.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Back on the expenses, the lighting and landscaping zone 8, the $1.1 million, do you have any detail on what that was?
The 1.1, yes. So this is government wide, but there is more detail for lighting and landscaping zone 8. We're going to get there on
okay.
page 17.
I'll wait then. Thank you.
18? No. Goodness gracious. 16. On page 16, there's some more detail which breaks out on the fund base. Government-wide basis, you don't have to do, that's not a requirement, so that's why this looks like that. It's the format that they require us to put it in. So it's basically all gets grouped together. But on the fund base is where you can see more detail. So let's go ahead and go to page 15. That's the balance sheet for the governmental funds on the fund base. So as you can see, there's no long-term assets and no long-term liabilities on this balance sheet. At the bottom is the reconciliation to the government-wide basis. So for fund-based, your total assets were $2.6 million. Your total liabilities were $165,000. And then your fund balance was $2,450,000. And then again, down at the bottom is your reconciliation of the long-term assets and liabilities. So your capital assets, long-term accounts receivable that's not received within a certain period of time. So that reconciles to the government-wide. Page 16, this is basically your income statement for your governmental funds. So this gives you a little bit more detail on what you can see there is for lighting and landscaping zone 8. You're not going to tie that $1.1 million that was on the government-wide to this number because this is fund-based. But you can see essentially what makes up these amounts. Payroll expenses, repairs and maintenance, utilities, insurance. Capital outlay is the purchase of any capital assets. So your total revenues on the fund-based for governmental funds was $1,322,000. Your expenditures were $1,378,000, so you had a decrease of $56,000 for the year. Page 17 reconciles those, again, to the government-wide basis. Page 18 is the proprietary fund, so this is your water and sewer and your financing authority. And so for the proprietary funds, your total assets for the year were $121,236,000, and then your total current liabilities were about $2.5 million. Your non-current liabilities of around $72 million. So your net position at the end of the year was at $46,600,000. Again, that's made up of net investment and capital assets, restrictions for capital projects, and then your unrestricted funds. On page 19, this is your income statement for your proprietary funds. So you can see that broken out by the water and sewer. It gives you the detail of what makes up those numbers as far as depreciation, repair and maintenance, utilities, etc. So total operating income was $392,000. Your non-operating revenues and expenses, like your interest expense, bond issuance cost, so that was $1,031,000. So you had a change in net position of a decrease of $639,000 in the proprietary funds. On page 20, this is a statement of cash flows just for the proprietary funds, since they're not required for governmental funds. So you can see on a cash in, cash out basis, what it looks like in the proprietary funds. So in total, you had $2.1 million of cash that was provided from operating activities. And you used about $11 million for capital-related financing activities. You received about $512,000 from investing activities. So you had a net decrease in your cash and investments of $8.5 million. So your total cash and investments at the end of the year was $28,354,000. And then down below it reconciles your operating activities as far as non-cash items like depreciation, and then it shows you the fluctuations in the operating accounts. Page 21 starts the notes to the financial statement. There wasn't really anything significantly changed this year as far as your notes. No new note disclosures were required. So Note A is a very large note disclosure. It just goes through and gives you the summary of significant accounting policies, describes your reporting entity, the basis of accounting, explaining what I've already explained, government-wide, fund-based. So Note A just kind of goes on for pages and pages. Nothing has really changed here. So if we continue on, page 32 is Note B. This is your cash and investments. So you can see your cash, again, broken out between your governmental activities and business-type activities. And then you have your deposits with financial institutions, and then you have certificates of deposit and what's held at the county treasurer's office. So your total cash and investments for the year was the $30,939,000. And then the rest of this is just required disclosures regarding your investments, money that's basically held at the treasurer's office and at the financial institutions. On page 35, under the custodial credit risk, you will note that we did have a bank balance of about $30 million, and the FDIC insured amount is about $500,000. So we disclose that difference here as far as a risk. And then on page 36, note C is your accounts receivable. This shows you your accounts receivable broken out by fund, and then also the allowance for uncollectible. So your total accounts receivable net of your allowance for uncollectible accounts is $733,000. Note D is your transfers. So this is transfers that happen between your funds. Because you have commingled funds, meaning you have bank accounts that have multiple transactions happening between different funds. There's transactions that you have to transfer between, and so that's what this is explaining. It's explaining the transfers in and out of those funds. Page 38, note E is your capital assets. Again, this just gives you a detail of all your capital assets for the year, broken out by the different groups. You had a large addition in the construction in progress. Again, because you're still spending that bond money that you guys have received. Page 39 continues Note E, and that just gives you your depreciation expense by fund. Note F is your long-term debt, so it's explaining your long-term debt for the year. On page 40 is a table that just shows you your beginning debt, what was paid, what was added, and then your end of the year. So at the end of the year, you had $37,231,000. $848,000 of that is due within 1 year. And then we go on to explain the different bonds that you have. So there's a new part of that is obviously your new 2022B Enterprise Revenue Refunding Bonds. So those are explained at the bottom of page 41. Continue on to page 42. Also on page 42, there's a debt service table that shows you what your commitments are going forward, so you can see what those look like. Note G is just a disclosure that you have a deferred compensation plan. The contributions to that plan were about $86,000. Again, and then on page 43, just to explain the deferred contribution plan. again, also those contributions to the plan for the year of the $62,000. Compensated absences, that's just your accrual for any unused vacation at the end of the year, so that was about $93,000. Note I is just disclosing that you have insurance with the SDRMA and the liability, limits of liability on that, on those policies. Your governing board is listed on note J, and then just the general disclosure regarding contingencies and commitments. And then your required supplementary information is just your special revenue fund, which is your lighting and landscaping zone 8. So you can see budget to actual information there. And then the last part is our other independent auditor's report. Because we have to do this in accordance with government auditing standards, this is another report that we have to issue on internal control. And so again, this is a clean opinion, a modified opinion, nothing out of the ordinary, very standard, and this is what we've received historically in the past. Anybody have questions on the audit report before I go into the other letters?
I just had a quick question. I'm not sure if you're the right person or Dina's the right person, but just to clarify on a custodial account, the $31 million, but only $500,000 is protected. Is that normal?
Well, you are a special district, so you are collateralized. You have a district because you have public funds, so you have a different, it's different than just you and I having money in our bank. So you have additional collateralization that we don't have. So you don't, it's really not much of a risk.
Perfect.
But we have to put it in there because that's what we have to do. But.
And we might as well go on record knowing what everyone's opinion is. So that's good to hear that. Risk factor is minimal.
Yes.
Is there anything in here that addresses our reserve funds at all, or is that not part of this report?
No, the only thing that...
I mean, I'm looking at net positioning, and that would have some indication, right? If we've had a decrease in... Or am I mixing apples and oranges? I may be mixing apples.
No, as far as reserves, the only thing we line out here is the restriction for the capital projects, which is in relation to the money that you receive from the bonds.
Bond money, yeah. Forget the question. I withdraw the question, Counselor. I just start looking at numbers and it makes me think.
That's yes, fine. That's fine.
But I didn't, I thought I was apples and oranges there.
You're talking about a reserve that was established by board policy. So that's like an internal reserve. Is that the reserve you're talking about?
Like in the budget?
I'm not talking about anything at this point. I will be talking to you later.
Okay.
No, it's not part of this report. And it's, it. When you were talking about net cash positions, it started my mind thinking about, well, wait a minute, if we're $636,000 less than we were last. But that's not, that apples and oranges, forget it. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. Is there anybody else on the audit report? Okay, if not, we'll go on to the other letters. Let's go ahead and go through the management advisory letter. Everybody has that. So the management advisory letter, we did have some additional recommendations this year, and that's most of that has to do with the transitioning that happened during the year, so things weren't like the only thing would be because you had people leaving and you had a gap in that position of your finance manager, so it's pretty normal for that to happen. So the first one that we had was just regarding payroll approval. So this is just making sure that somebody, whether that's the general manager or the finance manager, is consistently approving payroll prior to it being processed. So just so you guys know, we go through and do some testing. And so when we do our testing, we're testing a transaction through the process. So we're just making sure what you say you're doing and what's documented that you're supposed to be doing is what's really happening. And so if we see these things happen, sometimes if it's a one-off, meaning we see it happen one time, we kind of say, okay, it just happened at once. It's not a consistent thing. But if we see something that's happened a few more times and a lot of times, then that's when we'll kind of give you guys a recommendation on, just tighten this up a little bit. So that's essentially what these are. Again, nothing glaring, just things to just kind of work on. So one was that, was just making sure the payroll's getting approved. The second one is just regarding the closing process. And so from the time Julie left and the time Margaret started, you know, there was a gap there. And so I know Margaret's been working really hard on trying to get, you know, the processes back in place. And so I know that she has worked on doing a hard close each month. So we just want to make sure that there's a closing process and that there is documentation of support for that, for those basically balance sheet items. There's a plate, whether that's stored electronically or whether that's in a binder, it doesn't really matter to us, just as long as there is a closing formal process and there's support to support what's being presented on a monthly basis. So I know that Margaret has already been working on that and has started to implement those things. The other item is one we had from last year, and that's just regarding the cash disbursements and the vendors being set up. So there's just a little bit of, and I know that I think it's being worked on as far as how to separate some duties between somebody who's entering in the information that is paying the bills, that's also then taking the signatures and putting the signatures on those checks that they're generating. So there needs to be some separation there. And so I know that there's some discussion on how to make that happen and with the size of organization that you have and how to make that work. So that's what this is, and that was here from the year before. And that's all we have. Overall, I mean, we enjoyed working with Margaret. She's I think a very good fit for the district, and I think she's good for the district. She has a kind of a higher level of knowledge. She's a fellow CPA, so from our standpoint, we can talk apples and apples. So the hard part was just the remote. But other than that, I think that, you know, I think she's doing a good job, and I think she's doing a good job. They had a lot of changes, but I think they got through it, you know, fine. So nothing, I don't think there's anything alarming. The only other item I have is what we call our communication with those charged with governance letter. That's the other letter that should be in your packet. And so in this letter is just saying that there are some estimates that are in your financial statements. And then also if we had any disagreements with management or we had any difficulties encountering performing our audit, then that would be included in this report. We didn't have any of that. We also include any material adjustments that we make to your financial statements. So those are in here as well. Again, this is just a very clean report, nothing glaring and pretty standard. So does anybody else have anything else for us?
No, I had a few questions, but Dina answered them for me earlier this week, so good to go.
Okay. We're always here if you guys need to contact us, mm-hmm. Feel free to contact us.
Yeah, the reports are very thorough.
If you can't
sleep
at night, I guarantee you, if you start reading this, you'll go to sleep.
Good to know.
The important thing is we got someone else looking over our shoulder and giving us the stamp of approval, and that's what
we'll see.
Yeah.
That's about. Yeah. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So does the board have any other discussion before we let public comment?
Could you go to public comment then?
Absolutely. Yep. Is there any public with hands raised?
There are no hands raised.
Okay. I still believe we have no public that wants to comment. Okay, very good. Take it back to the board for discussion and possible action.
I move approval of report.
Second.
Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gatto?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Kelly?
Aye. Thank you very much. Thank you for the report.
Thank you.
We'll move to E2, discussion, possible action regarding the emergency replacement of a failed retaining wall at the community center.
This will be Mike Iraka, and he is online tonight. So we'll just give him a second to pop up.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Awesome. All right. So we have a retaining wall back behind the tennis courts, and if we're able to see, I believe the third, or let's see, past the resolution, past the notice of exemption is a photo. Thank you. There you go. So that is, as you can see, the retaining wall is moving over, and we replace the retaining wall. And I believe Gregory made a presentation to the Park and Recreation Committee regarding this issue. He had some engineers he reached out to that came up with some ideas on how to take care of this. We were looking at some potential less costing options, and we came up with what we believe is a good, more economical solution, which I believe would be two pages down on this. Well, the next page actually starts there. This is the area shown in red where this retaining wall is failing. It's fairly close to the property lines. And then the next photo, the next slide, this is the concept we have. You've probably seen these keystone and stacked block style retaining walls on the side of the freeways to come in there. We've already had a contractor come out, and they're working on finishing up their price proposal to us, which will be quite a bit less expensive than the more expensive drilling piers and putting in concrete and steel and, you know, more concrete all over this this retaining wall. So this is going to be about one third the cost. And on top of that, of course, it would be tree replacement, because if we can go back up to the previous slide, you can see there's quite a few trees back in this area. And we have spoken to the county about this project because it is such a tall retaining wall, about 4 feet high. They are going to require us to get a permit and go through a plan review process and a tree removal permit. So we're working on a tree removal application because some of these trees are actually growing out through the retaining wall and they need to come out. So that's part of the project as well. So if we can go back up to the staff report. The very first page, perhaps. But in any event, so part of the process is we need to satisfy the requirements of CEQA, which this project is considered exempt under CEQA. And so all we need to do is file a notice of exemption. And the board would adopt the attached resolution 2024-03, basically providing the general manager with authority to replace this wall under the emergency provisions of our purchasing policy. And we did reach out to several contractors, and responses we got are as noted in the staff report, but many of them said that they do not do government work, but they're getting wages. One indicated that they wanted the town to pay them about $3,000 to first have an architect come out and develop the drawing. But we did find the Bayside Pavers out of Concord, and they actually came out, measured up, gave us some ideas. They're preparing a proposal. We do have a draft of the proposal, but we need to have them do a little bit of engineering work to refine the proposal at a cost of about $3,000. And then we can submit the whole package to the county for permit review and processing. So with that, I can entertain any questions you may have.
It's Carolyn. I have a question for you. In the photo or the picture by the tennis courts, and you've got the red line in the back, and then the red line stops, but it looks like the retaining wall may continue there. Is that not retaining wall, or is that not falling down, or would we include that?
No. So you're saying to the left of where the red line stops?
Yes.
That is a concrete pathway.
Ah, okay.
There is no retaining wall there.
Yeah, no wall. Okay, thank you.
Correct.
I have a quick question about the trees. Sorry, I know it's kind of... Do we need to, are any of those trees residence trees, and do we think that's going to cause any issues because that backs up to residential homes, correct?
None of the trees that we would be removing are residence trees. They are all on our property. There will be a notice going to these homeowners from the county, and the county gave us a very good suggestion that we should be proactive and reach out to these homeowners to tell them about our project, show them these photos, and explain what the project's all about, including the tree removal, just so that they're not surprised when they get the notice from the county.
Thank you.
Is tree removal permit unique to Contra Costa County? Or is this like wherever you have to get a permit to remove your own tree?
Yes.
Depending on the size and the scope of the work and the species of the tree, yes. If you have a tree over a certain diameter, Contra Costa County does require a tree removal permit.
They require an ordinance as well.
Hey, Mike, it's Brian Guteau. Is the CEQA exemption because of the fact it's considered an emergency?
There's a few that I've cited in the document. There's what's called statutory exemptions, which is emergency repair to publicly owned facilities. And there's categorical exemptions, which are replacing structures in their general same location. Those are the two types of exemptions that we fall under with this project. Basically replacing, in kind, but the same general structures going back in. Removing one and putting it back in.
Serving the same purpose as the one you're removing.
Yes, replacement or reconstruction of existing structures, where the new structure will be located in the same site as a structure being replaced and have substantially the same purpose as the structure being replaced.
Okay.
That's in the exemption itself.
I don't have any further questions.
Any further questions from the board?
No.
Any public like comment on this?
No hands are raised.
Okay.
I said, why do we need a resolution, though?
So we recommended a resolution for two purposes. One, that it's an emergency declaration because we are going outside of our policy. Policy 11 requires the board to take action in an emergency situation. So in the event that we come back to this or somebody asks a question about why are we conducting this outside, that's one element. The other element is it also supports the administrative record for any CEQA issues.
Thank you. That's curious.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if there's no further discussion, entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt recommended action to authorize general manager to execute all contracts, permits, documents necessary, adopt resolution 2024-03, and authorize staff to file the attached notice of exemption with the county
office. I'll second.
Great. Does that satisfy all your requirements? Okay. Can we get roll call, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Guteau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you very much. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Mike.
All right, moving to E3, discussion and possible action to adopt a new commercial court program.
We will pass that to Margaret Moja, our finance manager. She is online.
Hey, Margaret.
General Manager's not here.
Hello, good morning. Good evening, everyone. No, good morning for the next day. I'm here to present to you on the commercial court program. This item was brought to the Finance Committee in February, and it was forwarded to the board for your consideration. We are looking at replacing our current commercial court program, which is currently with US Bank, with one that is being presented by EMPWA. We do currently use about 12 to 14 credit cards for district residences for the purpose of supplies, travel, other needs to make sure that we are efficient in our use, and certainly we are monitoring those costs that are there. But we wanted to look for a more efficient system that allows us a little bit more access, if you will, to the cards, and there are some other good features that are there that we wanted to present to you with as well. So first of all, as you see in the board report, there are a few bulleted or numbered items that I wanted to share with you. One had to do with administration. It allows us to have multiple users with different types of access. So you don't need to have all the full admin rights. You can have a view only access so that you can actually have some who are processing the credit card receipts to be able to see those reports and to be able to monitor where it is. And then there are a handful of us that are only able to access the more discrete functions of if there's fraud on the account or if you have to add an account or delete an account. It would be sort of, at this point, deferred to Tina and myself to look through. The one nice feature that they have is these virtual cards. I do recall Dina mentioned at the board retreat that you had or board workshop that you had that these virtual cards are a nice way to be able to have some of those recurring charges that we do use the credit card for. Those are for utilities that rather than them being on one MasterCard, we can put them on a virtual card. So we would assign a virtual number to each one of those items. So if there is any issues with the main sort of administration card, then you don't have to go through this process of contacting the vendors to then get them reset up to the new card. They're all sort of assigned. If anything does get affected, if you will, by one of those virtual cards, so we can shut that one down and again, it doesn't stop the business there. So that was a nice feature for us. It does allow us to have integration should we choose to use that. It does provide Visa protection. Again, those are some of the basic functions that I think most of these card programs has. It does have an annual rebate that you can get 1% back, and we do currently have that with our current program. But again, another great feature that we thought was a nice one with Umpqua is that they have this broken program, and this is something that we're not necessarily going to act on today, but it is something we are considering, which is looking at the vendors that we have, and if we convert them to paying them again with a different type of a virtual card, we would then essentially benefit from rebates from them. So instead of paying one of, let's say, your supply vendors with a check, you could pay them with a Visa, and then we would get rebates on that. So that would be something that we look there. And one of the reasons why looking at those features, if you will, is a positive thing is to try to mitigate against sort of check fraud so that that is on the rise. And so we're looking at alternate ways to be able to do that, either through payment of vendors through these credit cards, as I mentioned. And then outside of this program, it could be something like through an ACH, which is like a wire that goes from bank to bank and it's right into their account. So for these reasons, we thought this was a good program. We did meet with Umpqua representatives, and I did provide their presentation in the report for your reference if you wanted to see any additional information. We do see this as a positive thing to be able to move forward with it. With the board's approval, if that is what you choose to do, this is about a 4 to 6 week implementation. We will move that to the piece that we are comfortable with, knowing that we have lots of other sort of activities here. But from their perspective, you know, once we provide them the application, they'll do their due diligence with their underwriting to kind of give us the amount set aside for us, then and setting up the account, we can have this in place, like I said, in 4 to 6 weeks. So relatively easy transition to, and it's just a matter of switching out cards with the current cards with our employees that have credit cards to the new card that is there. With that, like I said, the recommendation is to approve the resolution that you see there in the attachment. It's resolution 2024-02 for the adoption of a new commercial card program. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Just for board reference, this came to finance, mm-hmm. and we felt like this was, the benefits of it were really well, really good mm-hmm. for what we're trying to do in the district, and the growth program of the 1% rebate and doing that, I mean, anything we can do to try and get revenue outside of what we're doing to help our reserves or other projects that we have, we feel is good.
How many employees does the district have?
We have 18.
So 14 out of 18 employees have cards?
Correct.
Why?
All the managers, all the field crew, and then one admin card.
Everybody that works in the field gets a credit card?
Yeah, they have a truck, so they need to get gas. So that's the main reason for it. So they are restricted. They have a very low dollar so that we can afford their monthly gas.
What happens if they go down to, oh, a question for Aaron. What happens if they go down to Ace to pick up material, do they?
We have an Ace account, and they have their name on the Ace account.
Okay, good. So that's controlled then by the manager. Okay, so they're not using the credit card.
Not typically, no. Typically, unless there's, for some reason, they need to use it. But no, we have an Ace account with Ace. So, and then even with Water Savers, we have an account there. So landscape guys can go to Water Savers, and they can use that account, and they buy things on those accounts.
Okay. And I would also comment that you can also restrict usage of where they can use the card. So if you don't want them to go to Target or go to, you know, restaurants or whatever the case is, you can actually do it by benefit types, and so you can reduce, if you will, their ability to use those cards at those locations. So there are other features that we could turn on if we need that there, but we are very diligent about going through and making sure we have backups to receipts and follow up through those things. So that we make sure that
every person that has a card also signs a form stating that their card is for business purposes only for the town of Discovery Bay.
I have complete faith in your system of monitoring and making sure that charges are being made like they should be. I just was surprised that everybody had it. Because I knew we only had like 14 to 16 employees, and you have 14 cards. I'm like, well, why does Kelly or Terry or Leslie or they don't have cards? There's one admin. Beatrice uses it for bank reservations for our trips, or Kelly will use it for our trips, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just curious. It just seemed weird. Now I understand.
Any other questions from the board? Like to see if there's any public comment?
There are no hands raised.
Okay, bring it back to the board. Any further discussion or entertain a motion?
Motion, staff recommendation.
Second.
Can I get a roll call?
And to adopt the resolution.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Coe?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you. Thank you very much, Margaret. Looks like a good program. And thank you, Finance Committee, for reviewing that beforehand. Okay, so I'm seeing a bunch of blanks. So no manager's report, no GM report, no director's reports. Perfect. We have a couple of filed regional meetings and training report. Was there anything of note that needs to be? Okay. Excellent. Correspondence, legal report. Okay. Future agenda items from the board. All right. With that, at 7:47, we will adjourn. Thank you.